Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'ahotep, to everyone. Welcome to another edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and we thank everyone for joining us this evening. For those who are on our blog, of course, we welcome you and thank you for tuning in. And, of course, we are now also on Zoom, so welcome, Zoom family. We know that more will be coming in shortly. As we prepare to wait for the dialogue and to proceed with tonight's really, really very informative program, we're going to hear a few words from none other than Mumia Abu-Jamal. Okay, hold on a minute, family. We're trying to cue it up. It's not coming up, but give us a minute here. Okay. Let's see if this...
Greetings. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Greetings. Greetings. We are about to get started, and we're starting off with a salute to one of our elders whose going home services took place today. You probably are not familiar with her because, again, when it comes to our women, oftentimes our history, contributions, and so forth is not necessarily really taught, and we're going to make sure that that happens. So without further ado, for those who don't know about Sister Ayulawa Ferguson, here's some information about her.
Ayulawa Ferguson, 91 years of life, love, and struggle. The long-term activist and educator, Ayulawa Ferguson, wife of the former political prisoner, Herman Ferguson, has finally reached her rest. Born Constance Josephine Swan on June 28, 1932, in Brooklyn, her father, Jason Swan, and mother, Mary Coach, gave her a brother, Charles, and her sisters, Julia, Myra, and Gloria. When she graduated summa cum laude with an education degree from Hunter College in 1965, she began a long and distinguished career as a teacher at P.S. Foyer. She found a partner in Herman Ferguson, as both opposed the racism they found in the public school system in New York. In 1967, Herman Ferguson got arrested, and she helped begin a defense committee for him and other members of the Black Brotherhood Improvement Association. In 1972, Herman went into exile in Guyana in South America, where she would join him. On June 29, 1972, the two were married, and she would take the name Ayulawa. Ayulawa Ferguson would continue her passion of education by becoming executive editor of the Guyana National Service Publishing Office, where she edited, wrote, and published educational materials for Guyanese students and teachers. When the couple returned to America, Ayulawa would fight again for Herman's freedom. Herman would work with the late Safia Bukhari and Jaleel Montekin to found the Jericho Movement, a group fighting for the freedom of Black political prisoners. Ayulawa and Herman would begin the annual political prisoners tribute dinner to bring together families of such prisoners to demonstrate that they were not alone and isolated. Ayulawa and Herman retired July 2000 to go home in North Carolina. Ayulawa is survived by 10 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren. After 91 winters, she returns to her ancestors. With love, not fear, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
All right, indeed. And that, of course, was Mumia Abu-Jamal. And for those who do not know, Mumia Abu-Jamal is still incarcerated. He has been incarcerated now for over 41 years. And starting next month, we're going to really up the ante to increase our campaign to fight for his freedom. Next month will be his 70th year on the planet. And again, he served at least over 41 years of that in incarceration as an innocent man. And of course, the evidence to show that he's innocent has been presented over and over. But our position, of course, is even if he did, kill the cop that they say he killed, the fact it still remains that everyone else that was incarcerated, and particularly those who were targeted by COINTELPRO, as Mumia, as others, they had been released. Sundi Ada Akoli, released. Faith Kuodinga, released. Jalil Montague, released. So, and there's others. All of the Move 9, released after 40 years. And so to keep Mumia incarcerated clearly is showing something else is going on. And so next month, again, family, we're going to have a full session that talks about Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. We want to make sure that you all please send him some cards, some letters next month for his Earth Day commemoration. But more importantly, to let him know that people still care and, of course, that we are still fighting. And now we're up in the ante. And with that said, for those who are writers, or you're interested in being a writer, if you want to be a part of a journal or, shall we say, a publication that will definitely be online and may end up being in hard copy, we're creating what we call the Mumia Abu-Jamal School of Journalism based on the teachings, the instructions of Mumia Abu-Jamal. When we spoke with Mumia last year, and again, he was very ill. He has congestive heart failure or had congestive heart failure and went through a major surgery. Fortunately, he did survive, but he still has complications from that illness. He also has diabetes. He also had COVID twice, and he had hepatitis C, which he still has the symptoms of a very bad skin rash. But when we did speak with Mumia last year, he did agree to be our instructor, to help us to learn more about the field of journalism, because for those who do not know, he is a journalist par excellence. He was voted one of the most 10 upcoming people here in Philadelphia before him being targeted and then ultimately arrested and then convicted. And so his skill as a reporter, as a journalist, is well noted. So for him to provide instruction, guidance, et cetera, in that field of writing, reporting, certainly he's more than capable. And to do it in the manner that he does it. So we're going to talk about guerrilla journalism. We're going to talk about progressive black community investigative reporting and really get instructions and insight into that. We need our own everything. And you're going to hear us say that more often. Our own everything forever. That's one of our new slogans, and we're getting ready to also make certain that that's a part of our brand. Our own everything forever. So again, we want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. We have a very, very interesting program for you tonight. We are going to focus, of course, on our women and girls, since this is Women's History Month. Also will help us to take a closer look and to get better prepared for some action, because we don't just want to talk about what the problem is. You know, we kind of know what some of the problems are. What we don't know is what the heck are we going to do? And that's where MWWM comes in at. And by the way, family, we said several months ago that there was going to be some stuff thrown in the game. Well, it has come. And we know some more is going to come. Rest assured, we know that people are already being ready to be sent in. in order to attempt to dismantle, destroy, or whatever. We've been down that road before, and we'll continue to go down that road, because if you're doing anything in this country that is, in fact, going to help our people, well, best believe you're going to be targeted, we're going to be targeted, we're going to run into all kinds of opposition. But I had really no idea. Well, also, I had no idea. You know, the haters are really coming out, more almost more than before. And I'm starting to realize that when you start talking about black women and girls, nobody really wants to hear that. You know, whether it's a psychological thing or whether it's subliminal, the fact remains a lot of folks really don't want to hear about the issues of black women and girls. And at first I thought maybe I was being a little delusional or, you know, not really thinking or focusing on some things, but now I can prove it. As we proceed, you're going to see and hear more about how we are contacting groups, organizations, individuals, et cetera, to help us look closer and do more about the issue of violations of our women and girls here in the U.S. Now, we do have an international piece as well, but we say for right now, let's deal with what's going on here in North America. And so as we begin to do further research, document, we're going to show the increase of rape, murder, beatings, molestation, kidnapping, sex trafficking, and missing black women and girls has doubled. Over the past 10 years, doubled. So whatever folks are doing, it's not working. With all the thousands of nonprofit groups and organizations that are getting funded, 90% of them, from what we've seen so far, do nothing. They have nothing that focuses on rape, murder, other violence and abuse. Their focus is on gun violence, gang violence, drug-related. And so we're going to change that, because as women, we deserve just as much care, concern, or whatever as anyone else. And as our great saint, Fannie Lou Hamer, taught us, we are sick and tired of being sick and tired. So we're getting ready to take some control over our own destiny, our own situation. And as the Honorable Marcus Garvey said, up, you mighty people. Accomplish what you shall, and so we will do that. Anyway, family, again, thank everyone tonight. Big shout out to my Baba Ngozi's in the house. Thank you, Baba, for tuning in. I don't see my sister Keisha, but if she is listening, because a lot of times people are online and I can't see them, they can hear us, and that's all good. But big shout out to my sister Keisha if she is listening in. I appreciate that, sister, so much. You know, we're going to start showing more appreciation for our women and our girls, because what we're realizing is that we need it. We need each other, and we need also to give each other the kind of support that is necessary. So, again, big ups to my sister Keisha, investigator par excellence. Let me see. Of course, Sister Janae is in the house. Thank you, Sister Laura, for joining us as well. And again, for those of you who are in the blog, we thank all of you as well. Okay. Before we move on tonight, let me just give you an overview of some of what we're going to be talking about. And I don't see Mama Condi in queue, but if she is listening, always big shout out to Elder Mama Condi. Tonight, it's going to be a very interesting dialogue. We're going to talk to our sister Tawanda Jones, who her daughter is a professional, I guess it's cheerleading. You know, she's a young sister, but she's really into, you know, this really is a sport, by the way. And so she takes her daughter to different tournaments, which we're going to talk more about later as well, because we have certain clubs that we've established and are bringing forward that will deal with tournaments for our girls and our women. But Sister Tawanda took her daughter to a tournament, And she just so happened to be riding in the South, meaning the southern part of the U.S. And in doing so, she got stopped a couple of times in different towns. Now, we're talking about like South Carolina and, you know, somewhere up and around in there. Well, she's going to come on, Shirley, and tell you about her experience. Have any of you ever heard of sundown towns? Well, she's the one that got caught up in one. So she's going to share with us a little bit about what's really going on today in the 21st century, not in the 1940s, 50s, whatever, you know, or, you know, well, you know, it was always going on, but, you know, even before then. But right here, right now, after all these bills and so far other things have been passed, our people are still subjected to the system of off-white supremacy in such a way that you almost can't escape it, particularly if you go in certain locations in certain areas. So again, Sister Tawanda is going to be joining us shortly. Now, we're going to talk about something else. We're going to talk with a woman by the name of Kate. We're going to talk to a woman who is going to share with us, Catherine. And I'm still, you know, kind of boggled by this, because here we have a former law enforcement person, right, who is brave enough, really, to come forward and talk about her experiences being in law enforcement, but particularly as it pertains to how black women, black people, but black women in particular, when it comes to, in this particular case, the murder of a young black female. And from her experience, she's going to share with us how they really do in the law enforcement field when it comes to investigating, or let's say the lack thereof. And she literally has said that they don't care. And, of course, we kind of already knew that, but to hear it come from someone that has been on the inside, and by the way, she got out. She could not, you know, continue to be involved in that kind of environment. But what she was able to do was to start an organization that specifically focused on missing people. So tonight, we're going to talk with her about that and learn about the horrific story of a 17-year-old young sister who was pregnant, found dead, and how nobody really cared within the so-called law enforcement system. But we're going to also hear about how this young sister kind of got to where she was, being pregnant at a very young age, which is not necessarily, you know, a bad thing, by the way, for, you know. But there are some areas here that need to be looked at. She had been exploited. She also went through, you know, various trials and tribulations. And again, it's important that we examine some of these things, because we got a lot of young girls out here, and a lot of them are experiencing some of the same things. And particularly as black women, we have to ask ourselves, what are we actually doing? Can we actually do? And certainly we can do more than what we are doing. I dare say that for sure. And so the other part to that is, what are we doing that isn't connected to the system? What are we doing just because as black women, we need to do that? So we're going to get ready to have that conversation. Before we do, I'm going to turn to Sister Jhené for a minute as I get the board set up for our conversation to see if she can. I didn't mean to put you on the spot, Sister Jhené, but if you can provide,
I'm here.
Okay, if you can provide just kind of an overview of, you know, briefly, of what we did today when we had our first sister session. Tell us a little bit about what we did today, Sister Janae.
Oh, my goodness. We had a wonderful session today at 12 o'clock. You know what? I thought today was Sunday, Saturday. We talked about a code of conduct for our sisters and how we would greet each other and what are we going to call each other and how we're going to have our own universal language, how we're going to address issues, because so many of us sisters have been in situations where we've been hurt. We've been church hurt, masjid hurt, whatever, social club, whatever you've been involved in with a group of women. Some women become vindictive and controlling and things like that. And we're learning how to handle that and combat that today. So some of the sisters suggested that we host a council of elders. Like if you have a gripe or a complaint with another sister, to really just, you know, instead of gossiping or participating in gossip or creating drama, let's consult the elders. Let's go to the village. Let's practice Ujuma, right? Ujuma. That's really just focus on the African-centered principles of how to take the village. We say that when it comes to our children, but we need to say that when it comes to the way we treat each other as women as well. Sisters need to learn how to take criticism and reproach and hold themselves accountable for their actions and the things that they say or do. Sometimes we don't do that, you know, and that's a problem that we have, is that our men are constantly saying women don't take accountability. They don't take accountability for what they're doing. So today we came up with the code of conduct and how to talk to each other and what are we going to say, how are we going to greet each other. So some of the sisters greet each other with Maya Hotel, you know, and that's recognizing and implementing that I know and I'm aware of the 42 laws of Maya. And hotel means peace, means I only wish you peace. My God, hotel. So that's a beautiful way to greet each other so we know that we're part of a sisterhood and just like a covenant. That's what we said. I couldn't get the word out. We organized a covenant between the women today, and it was just beautiful. Like, I wish we could have went longer, and I do encourage you all to join us on Saturdays at 12 noon. For the sister circle, you know, it's not for the brothers. Everything we do is not for the brothers. But the brothers still came on and supported us in the beginning before we started our circle. So I just want to, you know, that's my take on it. It was beautiful. It really felt genuine and sincere from all the sisters that attended.
Thank you, Sister Janae. And again, family, we will be doing it for those sisters that are interested. We do another session tomorrow at 12. We will be focusing again on codes of conduct. Again, we want to kind of get on a similar or same page in terms of our behaviors, things that we can work on individually and collectively. Because as we proceed, we are expecting Black men to step up. When we say protect and defend, now don't get it wrong, we're going to know how to protect and defend ourselves. However, we still want to make sure that our men feel comfortable in doing so. And with that said, that means that our behaviors need to be in place. We don't want to put anyone in jeopardy or put anyone in a situation where they're doing something and we're out of pocket. So we're going to work on that ourselves. So these sessions that we're having are for sisters only. It is for us to examine our behaviors. We know why some of the behavior is, and we'll still review some of that, but we're also solution-oriented. What can we do? What must we do to change some of our dysfunction. We have to take on some responsibility for some of that ourselves. And so these sessions are to help us do that. And again, some of it is based on some of the work of some of our greats, Dr. Amos Wilson, for example. Oh, thank you. I'm glad that Brother LaMoon, because I often forget to do that. Okay. We are recording now, so thank you for that. And again, we started out with Mumia Abu-Jamal paying tribute to Sister Ayulua Ferguson. But again, we made it very clear that we know as black women, we got some issues, a whole bunch of them, by the way. But hey, c'est la vie, that's life. We're in America, and therefore we know we have to now deal with that in terms of what it has, some of the damage that is done. And we are grown enough to take on some of the responsibility to work on some of our behavior. Now, recently I was told that I don't know how to talk to people, that people get offended sometimes because I say certain things in a certain kind of way. And so I've heard that before, but now in hearing it, I now analyze it. And so we're going to talk more about how when you have serious black women who are very vocal and not necessarily sugarcoat stuff, how oftentimes they're depicted or labeled in a certain kind of way. And particularly, let's say, by folks who are less disciplined. And I'm going to leave that there, and we'll talk about that tomorrow. But anyway, again, tonight we're going to talk about the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. And in this particular case, we're going to talk about a young sister who, 17 years of age, was murdered. Her name is Malaysia Hogg. And I'm sorry, I said Catherine first. We're going to talk very shortly with a woman named Kimberly Kite. I had the pleasure to talk to Kimberly the other day, and we talked about what happened to this young sister. Now, hopefully, we're going to also have joining us Sister Malaysia's cousin, and her name is Sister, I believe it's Janeria. And she's going to talk about her cousin, the young sister who was murdered, found murdered, again, 17 years of age, 9 months pregnant, and how the city officials act like, but yet there was a white male missing, and they put out full alert to find this white male. Now, again, this is what I'm being told by those there. And again, we've got to now have a better understanding about what's really going on. And it's not like we didn't know, but I told Sister Janine earlier, sometimes when other people say something, for whatever reason, some of our people then act like, oh, okay, this is really serious, or we should be listening now. So, okay, we'll play along with that and make sure that we cover all of our angles and present the information. So before we go into the dialogue and talk about the murder of young sister Malaysia, I'm going to open up the mic for a few folks that may have a few words they want to share with us. I think I might see Mama Condi in queue. Let me see if that's her in queue. Give me a moment, family. Okay, we're going to go to caller Ed. Let's see, 9462. Your mic is open. Welcome to the segment, A New Day.
The only reason I hit one. Can you hear me?
Okay, we got you. We got you, Mama.
All right, sweetie. The only reason I hit one is because I wanted you to know I was here.
Okay.
And I have every intention of just listening.
All
the
right.
Only other thing I wanted to share is Mama Ialua was like a big sister to me, her and Safia Bakari. They were like big sisters to me, you know, my sheroes. When I grew up, I wanted to be like them. And I was blessed to be able to be on the Zoom for her homegoing. So other than that, I'm going to sit back and enjoy what y'all share tonight and bless you. Aya.
Thank you, Mama. Before you go, just so you know, we will be inviting you to be one of our Sistar Elder Council members.
I thank you. I realized this year, my birthday is in 2 days. And
all
I
right.
realized this year that I am the only elder female that is an elder only in age, because there are those older than me, but elder in time that I have been with the Provisional Government, Republic of New Africa, and still active. So that made me smile.
All right. And so do you mind sharing what your age will be in 2 days?
I will be 72 years young.
Wonderful. All right. So, Janelle, you hear that? We got our first, one of our first. We got a few already. Elder,
yes.
Sister. Yeah. And no, she got history. So we're not just talking about because of age or how long, Mama, when did you start your activism? Would you just share that briefly?
Okay. Briefly, I'm originally from North Philadelphia. My mama lived on Edgley Street, which was right down the street from the Church of the Advocate, 18th and Dining, where the Black Power Conference took place. I was 13 at the time. They paid me out of petty cash because I was too young. Four blocks from there was the UNIA building, and I was accepted there at age 11 and used to host some of the people who would come and speak and lecture in Garvey's building. In the opposite direction on Susquehanna Avenue around the corner was the Black Panther Party office. They accepted me there when I was 13, and down the street at the opposite corner, the Moores owned a bookstore, and they took me in at 11 years old. That was my beginnings.
All right. And so, again, at the age of 13, and roughly, what was that, 1968-ish or something like that?
Yes, 1968, exactly.
All right. All right, family. So as you can tell, we're talking about connecting with folk, again, not just because of their chronological age, but because they have experience, history, involvement, commitment for our people. All right. All right, Mama Condi, thank you so much.
Bless you, sweetie. I yield.
Thank you. All right, great. All right, family, I do see our guest is in queue, and we are getting ready to, again, hear some very kind of alarming things. I mean, not so much as alarming, because some of us have worked in these areas and have seen and heard a lot, but I think to hear what you're going to hear tonight, if not alarming, definitely is concerning. It should be. And also, hopefully, more motivational, because our conversations is not just about having talk or dialogue. Our conversations are to provide you with information, but also motivation. We want folks to do more. We know we all are doing, you know, some are juggling 50,000 things, but we have to begin to put some appeals out there. And the appeals are, if there is time for a lot of other things, and for some folks, they got time to watch TV, the housewives and the da-da-da-da. I'm joking, y'all. Not really. But the point is, shouldn't there also be something there that you could say that we're doing to help our women and girls? We do a lot of stuff and for a lot of causes. Reparations, homelessness, education, prisons, you name it. But how many could say, this is what I do to help our women and girls and remember my mama or something like that? Anyway, y'all get a gist of what I'm saying. So tonight we are going to have another conversation about why we must step it up in order to better protect and defend our women and girls. So without further ado, hold on one moment. Okay. And again, thank you, Mama Condi. I'm going to take you out of queue for a minute. And we are going to talk with Kimberly Kite, who, again, I spoke with a few days ago. And it was really a wonderful conversation. Because, again, it not only confirmed that what we already knew, given the fact that we have stats that show us the kidnapped, missing, exploited, particularly young girls, sex trafficked young girls, particularly. We have stats from different states on this. And the fact that there's little to nothing being said or done in our communities, and definitely not by law enforcement. And so since we know that, it behooves us to step it up and start dealing with this ourselves. And some of us as black women, we're going to do that. And so we're also saying if other folk can see the importance of this, we have to ask ourselves now, what about us? So with that said, again, we're going to bring in, she is previously law enforcement and concerned, obviously, because she's out there in the field doing the work, the investigation work, which is why we're able to get this information tonight. And so with that said, we're going to bring in Kimberly Kite, and I'm not sure. Oh, I think we do have Sister Malaysia's cousin. So I'm just going to bring them all in. Give me a moment. Let me get over to the boards. Okay. Uh-oh, hold on 1 minute. Trying to bring you in. There we go. All right. Okay. Kimberly, do we have you?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here.
Wonderful. Greetings. Thank you for taking the time to join us, and welcome to this important session of New Day.
Thank you very much for having me on here.
Oh, absolutely. Any time that we get information, it is important that we make sure that our people know what that information is, because a lot of times the media is not going to put it out there. So we know we have to do that. So, again, we appreciate you taking the time to share this with us, and also for the investigative work that you and your group have been doing. And again, I'm going to get off the mic, and I'm going to have you to just go into it. If you'd be so kind, just share a little bit about you, a little bit about your background, so that folks know that you kind of know what you're doing and what you're talking about. Right? So, okay, I'm going to yield to you. By all means, please share. Okay.
Well, I live in South Carolina. Most of my working life was in law enforcement in one aspect, from road patrol, dispatch, juvenile corrections. I have done a lot. 14 years ago and stepped in, started helping families with and took 14 years. Found the right people along, blessed enough to be able to start a foundation with phenomenal individuals and to be able to help more people. So I I guess you want me to just
talk about what brought us into the case, or... fine, that's fine, thank you. I can give you a quick backstory
with law enforcement. I worked for a small community in Orangeburg County, Utahville. It was a very small town, predominantly black community, that was run by the good old boy town council, the good old boy mayor, the good old boy chief of police. The town did not have a voice. They had no say-so in anything. I mean, this town created ordinances. Not a whole lot to do in a small community like this. So a lot of the younger people lifted their cars, put the big tires on them, installed radios. They didn't do anything to hurt anybody. But they were harassed. They were harassed. They targeted a lot. For me, it was not about the ticket. It was not about the arrest. When I left that town, I left that town with a former law enforcer sleep well at night. But I did see the mistreatment of, and it wasn't just black young females, older females, it was black community. And it wasn't something that I was okay with. So I was able to make some change to that little community and, like I said, leave them with a voice. And that's what we're trying to do now when it comes to the missing. The between me doing this for so long and now having the people to walk with me in the foundation, now it's not just me with one voice. And I am heard, don't get me wrong. I am heard because I'm too loud not to be. But I don't think I'm taken seriously because I have been fighting and fighting for the 7-8 years of the mistreatment in the missing world with foster children, sex trafficking. And it has become frustrating to me because nobody listens. Nobody else stands up and says, I see the problem. Nobody does it. So to get a call from you to have this opportunity is absolutely phenomenal, honestly.
Wow. Okay, well, again, that's what, you know, responsible people do that, and particularly, you know, people who do follow their conviction of their belief system, whatever that is. And so, you know, again, we cross the board. We don't advocate any one religion or spiritual base. But what we do know is that there's a common ground there, and most folk, you know, kind of believe in justice. Or, you know, no matter what their background is or belief system is, the issue of justice is something that is relevant to us all. And so, you know, again, this is why we're having this dialogue, this young sister, this young girl. She needs justice. Her family needs justice. And this is just one of many, you know.
Yes.
This is just one of many, but this is one that we've got our handle on. So this is not just, you know, you see in a poster and or read the newspaper article. We're talking to someone who has researched, investigated what we're getting ready to talk about. So that gives us a different capability, I believe. So with that said, Kimberly, if you know, let's talk about 17-year-old Malaysia Hogg. Please share.
Well, Malaysia was a month pregnant. She was scheduled to be in on February 13th, and her actual due date was on February 12th. Ms. Timms is a very close family friend, reached out to me at the Broken Link Foundation through a message saying, could you please post this child on your page That was on February 12th. We later found out, and this was after Malaysia was already found deceased, but according to the police reports, was last seen between February 6th and February 8th. So by February 12th, you're already in 4 days. So we immediately flyered her. We listed her as endangered because she was 17 and she was pregnant. She's due at any moment. She immediately got numerous shares, more shares than I've ever seen a young black girl get on the page, to be honest. We immediately started reaching out family that we could get a hold of in Malaysia. We talked to the stepfather, and met a very, very feisty, very strong, and just, if this child does not become some kind of powerful attorney, but she's very young too, and it's one of Malaysia's cousins, Janaria. We do know about the white man that went missing around the time that she did from the same apartment complex. I'm not minimizing the fact that he is missing, but the fact that Malaysia was missing was minimized. She did not get the same attention. She did not get the same kind of Facebook posting by the police as the 47-year-old did. What I was able to learn throughout talking to so many people, when Malaysia's mom, she away 3.5 years ago from COVID. When she did deal with problems with Malaysia. Malaysia would go here or go there, gone for more than a day or two. Older men had been messing with Malaysia for a very long time, at a very young age. Mom went to local police numerous times. Mom confronted these older men, but nobody ever helped Mom, and nobody ever stepped to protect. She lost her mom. She had lost her dad at a very, very young age. Now her mom's gone. She chose not to stay living with stepdad. She moved in with her grandfather, so she pretty much, she was on her own. She could come and go do what she wanted to do. She has a large family on mom and dad, both sides, that love this child so much. But she had no one to protect. And law enforcement certainly didn't do it. The way that Malaysia was found, for me, I can honestly say this has been one of the hardest cases to even begin to be able to process, because she's a baby herself. You know, she was excited about having this child. She was looking forward to having the child. She named the girl after her mom. London Charity was going to be the little girl's name. And we do not know the cause of death. We cannot say anything negative about the side investigation. Carolina Law Enforcement Division Special Victims, they are handling the investigation. They are primary on it, not the local police. We do feel like they are doing everything that needs to be done. Right now, it is very quiet the family knows nothing. They, like I said, the cause of death is being kept quiet, and that's to protect the investigation. It's just, I can't say in Malaysia's situation, these paid attention, done what they should have done from the very beginning, that they could have saved her. But I think they could have prevented her laying out there like a piece of trash alone for as long as she did. But during the missing part of the investigation, myself, the other investigative researcher, Julie, she was on the phone with us the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Phone calls to the Barnwell County Sheriff's Office, to the Barnwell City Department. Nobody would return our call. We weren't calling to get information. We were calling to give information. But we never got to give it because nobody enough to call back. Now, after Malaysia was found, it was very easy to talk to someone at the Barnwell City because, see, now they can push it up and tell you you need to call someone. It's very disheartening. South Carolina alone has a lot of black women missing. Most of them are to be, but they just haven't been found. Law enforcement to look for them. Malaysia now is the youngest. The tragedy, that's something that should have happened. But it did. She's one of the youngest right now. And the fact she was due to have her it is very clear. Like I said, with her missing her, I was away by the number of shares so quick that Malaysia received. It was like for a moment I thought, wow, like eyes are open. People are really paying attention. And for a moment, but then certain comments, posts, and this and that are made. And I've made a post on the missing page that is home to 32,000 plus people. And I called out the elephant in the room. I also was accused of inciting racism from my post, which clearly came from a racist. The missing man's, it is a problem. There is no equality when it comes to a young black woman, a young black girl. Compare that next to blonde hair, blue eyed Gabby Petitos of the world. They don't get equal. Children. Young black girls make up a large percentage of foster care, foster homes. They're raped in foster homes. They run away. Some of them end up being put into sex trafficking because they're vulnerable. But those kids are important. Those kids do not matter. Nobody goes to look for them. Nobody tries to save them. You're not even supposed to flyer a foster kid runaway. I get calls a lot from social workers. You need to take the flyer down. Have they been found? No. Well, then it's not coming down. Couple months ago that called me. She said, you need to take it down. And I said, no. Has she been found? No, she has. Well, then it's not coming down. I said, do you have any what can happen to this little girl being out there? This little girl was 13. Cute little. And I said, ma'am, do you understand the trafficking threat to girls like this? She said, black children are not trafficked. I said, what rock did you crawl out from under? And I said, trafficking is horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, but if you have video and pictures and proof a young black girl is put through and done to her, horrific is not even the word. I said, I'll be glad to Oh, no, no, I don't need to see that. I said, then I suggest that you quit your job and you go get a job at Walmart. I said, because you do not believe the position that you're in. For anybody that thinks that black and black girls are not trafficked, I have no advice for them. You have to be completely blind and deaf. There is a real problem. There's been a real problem. It's not getting better. It's getting worse. There needs to be equality. At the end of the day, don't we all love the same? We all love the same. We all bleed the same. We all cry tears. We all hurt. But at the end of the day, we just want to be happy and healthy. Family member, no more important than mine. Why does a child belong in the news? White grown female belong in the news, but this other black child, other woman, they don't. There's so many. I mean, you have Jamila Smith out of Aiken County, presumed deceased, murdered by her boyfriend, domestic violence, that the police could have saved so many times. They didn't. Chris, boyfriend's murder. Crystal's never been found because they've never looked. They're not.
Okay.
How do they? Traffic.
Kimberly, you're starting to break up a little bit, so I'm not sure if you need to change your location because you're starting to break up a little. Let's take a pause here for a moment. And then also, if you're on speakerphone, sometimes that too will interfere, with the audio transmission. But before we go on any further, I want to see if Zanaria is in queue. I do see a couple of numbers that look like yours in terms of the area code, but I'm not sure. It's two, actually. So I'm just going to unmute and see if she's there. So give me a moment.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, let's try this one. Janaria, are you there? Okay, let's try another one. Okay, Janaria, is this you?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, great, we got you. Okay, wonderful. Wonderful. All right, there we go. Very good. Well, welcome to you, my sister. How are you this evening?
Hello, I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
Oh, we're doing what we're supposed to do. So when you do that, you're going to always be fine or close to it. So thank you for taking the time. Thank you for taking the time to join us. You can feel like you're at home because you are. You are amongst folk who definitely care. Because nobody comes in at 11 o'clock at night and it's got to be because they care, you know what I'm saying? And that's why we do a late program, because we know if folks take the time to join us, even though this is recorded so it can be heard anytime, but we know if people take the time to come in live with us, they really, they're pretty cool. They're okay, all right? So with that said, you're amongst family. So, okay. Again, welcome. And just, you know, share a little bit about you if you'd like, you know, who you are and what where you're at. And then talk to us a little bit about your cousin.
My name is Shaneria. I'm my late first cousin on her dad's side. I reside in South Carolina. On Malaysia, she was 17 years old, 9 months pregnant with the little girl. She was going to school in Barnwell County. She wanted to go to school. She wanted to graduate and go to school for nursing. You know, how I describe her is a sour patch, you know. She was bittersweet, you know, jokey. She was very smart and intelligent. She was very smart. You know, she was a lovable person to where her aura was so strong, a lot of people couldn't stand her. You know? So it was like, you know, when she come around, like, the vibe is there, like, you know, she was good people.
Mm-hmm.
And well, it's a lot that I want to say and a lot that I want to speak about to where I can't say what I want to say, you know, just for the sake of the case. But yeah, it's so tragic. And Malaysia,
okay.
she was tortured. Like she died in the most tragic way ever. Like no one, I would wish it on my worst enemy. No one should have to go through that. Malaysia was left in a ditch, half a mile away from her house, a mile away from the police department. Malaysia was missing for 2 weeks until she was found, going on 3 weeks. You know? So it's just all crazy, and it's like, you know, you have you thinking, what could she do so wrong to make somebody just torture her? You know?
Absolutely. So before we go any further, I want you to know that our arms are around you right now. Okay? And so when you are ready to not only talk further, but also, you know, to just kind of go more into a healing process, we want to talk more with you about that at a later time, okay? Okay, because I know this is beyond belief and certainly extremely painful. So I'm not going to belabor that with you right now. I thank you for sharing what you shared, and I want you to know that we feel some of what you have conveyed, which is why I'm not going to have you to continue at this time. But again, when you're ready, I want you to know that we're here. We pretty much control this program. We don't own the station, but the other stuff is ours. So my point is, whenever you want to either talk with us publicly or privately, we are here. Sister Janae, you want to second that emotion?
Yes, I do. And I just want to tell you, so from South Carolina, I'm from South Carolina. It's so good to hear your voices, to hear about our own Southern accent. And I'm from Spartanburg, South Carolina. So a lot of these cases, like the sister was saying, they do not get any attention. They don't get any, you know, we don't get Amber Alerts. We don't get, you know, none of that goes on when our women are missing, our girls are missing in South Carolina. So I know a lot of people in South Carolina, Georgia, all over, and it's the same thing. When our women go missing, nobody's looking for them. There's not these big search teams and things going on. You don't even hear it on the news, maybe a flash or something, but that's about the extent of it.
So that's
it's good to hear from you, and we do second that motion that we're here for you for emotional support.
That's
friend.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Thank you, Sister Yane. And that's why, you know, on our end with the Million Women World March, that's why we're doing what we're doing. Come October, we plan to assemble, and we're asking folks as we organize to get prepared to formulate your committee in your city so that you can bring to the march, to the rally, to the summit, information about missing Black women and girls in your city, in your county, in your state. We're asking folks to bring posters. You know, people bring signs and other things when they come to rallies or assemblies. Well, we're asking folks to bring the pictures, blow them up so that people can see who these missing Black women and girls are. So we're going to be telling you more about that, you know, as we proceed. I want to go to Kimberly for a moment, if I may, and thank you again, my sister. You know, again, as Sister Jhonae conveyed, we are here as Black women to support in whatever way possible. And as we build and grow, that's going to be one of our primary missions, and that is to assist in whatever way possible. And not only the finding and research, but the prevention. That's a whole nother thing. And this is what Kimberly was alluding to, that the system has failed. These children are in foster care. And, again, we've got to start examining that a little better, what we need to start doing. So we'll have that conversation another time. But again, Sister Janaria, I want you to know we care. We thank you. And we'll definitely be talking with you more in the future. I want to go back to Kimberly for a moment. And if I may, Kimberly, I don't know if we're at liberty to talk about this because this still is an open investigation. But mm-hmm. Sister Janaria mentioned something, and if you can share it, fine. If not, we understand. And that is Sister Janaria mentioned that Malaysia was tortured. So is there any light on that that you can maybe shed?
There's nothing known about how her life was taken. I think for Janaria, I think it is probably the only way that it can be described. Because
okay.
She said it should have never happened.
Right.
You know, this wasn't natural causes and anything other than natural. I mean, how do you view it? But as far as knowledge of cause of death, it has not been yet.
Okay. So, again, because it still is under investigation, they haven't released the report indicating what the cause of death was, correct?
Right. Yes.
Okay, got you. Okay. All right, so we'll wait. I mean, you know, but the whole point is, family, we may have to start writing letters or something to let the, you know, the people there, the jurisdiction there know that, you know, we are awaiting along with the family, of course, the family first, but we are in support of the family, and we'll be watching and waiting to hear what the results is from the autopsy or what may have you. And let me just make this other point clear for those who, and again, we know that some of this is psychological. And what I mean by that is a lot of people are programmed, whether we realize it or not to care when it comes to what happens to Black women and girls. Yes, I said it. I have to say it. Somebody's got to say it. And so I'm going to do that because it's true. And we can prove it. But the point is, at this stage of the game, what we're saying is that that must change, and we are going to make sure that it does. So we're gearing up to do something about that. But again, it may be necessary, and we'll make further determination as we get more into, getting closer to what's going on presently. But if we need to take further action, we need to do that. And again, it could be just writing letters to the local jurisdiction, be it the sheriff, be it the district attorney. I don't know what the municipality structure is there yet in terms of who it is we need to contact about what, but certainly we will know that, as we proceed. So I just wanted to
mention that.
Well,
one thing I wanted to let you know, too, in talking to the search side, you know, I talked to quite a few community who, they were black women, older women, both have lived in the community. And you hear a lot from communities on how they feel about their police department. Both of these women have been there 60-plus years, and both have said that this police department is extremely racist and has been for a very, very long time. That, to me, is worse than hearing a community say that they fear their police department. So I don't know how you change that, because you're talking two police departments in this area, a very small community. How do you change that?
Right.
You don't belong in law enforcement if you're racist. And you don't become racist when you step into law enforcement. You are already that person.
Sure. Sure. And if I can remember correctly, in our conversation earlier this week, you indicated that one of the towns, which is predominantly black, the sheriff is white, and that there's a fear factor.
Yes, that is
okay.
Aiken County.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. The sidebar thing that I wanted to say a few moments ago was, again, when I said there's a psychological situation with their oftentimes not being able to connect to the bigger picture of the violence and abuse, and particularly in this case, a murder, particularly of a very young girl, young teenager. Well, here's the other part to that. We're talking about two deaths.
Right.
Maybe this will help trigger in folks' brains. So we're talking about two deaths here.
Yeah.
One, a minor that is a teenager, 17 years of age, but then also an unborn child that
right.
was due to be born.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, if you can't, you know, wrap your head around the fact that we're talking about a young black girl being murdered, then maybe – there's a thought of the fact that there's an unborn child that was also murdered.
Right. Exactly.
So again, with that in mind, hopefully this will trigger, some thoughts of how we need to proceed in the future. Okay, family, what we're going to do now is open up the mic for you all. If there is a question or comment, we're going to take a few moments to do that. You know, we never leave you all out of our conversations. And so if there's something you'd like to share, you'd like to ask Kimberly, or you would like to convey to our young sister, Janaria, then I'm going to give you all the opportunity to do so. You can press 1 if you're in the blog. Again, press 1 if you'd like to say a few words. Again, this is not a dissertation, so please say a few words. You can press 1, Or if you're on Zoom, you could just use your hand gesture, and we will come to you, okay? So let me check the blog. All right. Yep. Hold on a minute. Okay. Caller at 8583. I'm coming at you. And 8583, your mic is open.
Greetings and Black Power. Can you hear me?
Yes. Greetings, Dr. Tuesday.
Yes. Just powerful stories. So I wanted to say thank you for sharing them as well, and for Sister Zaria specifically. You know, South Carolina, Spartanburg. You know, we have a lot of families that were going through unnecessary deaths there, and the dynamic for us to have advocacy and empower the people, especially highlight resources for Black families there, is in such a high demand. So I want to say thank you for sharing your story, and also anything that we can do to help to advocate for any families in South Carolina specifically. Let us know. We do appreciate you coming on New Day and sharing your story, and really our hearts and minds are with you. So I just wanted to leave that there and say thank you and appreciate you for having you guys there.
Oh, thank you, my sister.
Yeah.
All right. All right, family. So Dr. Truth Bay is in transit. She's actually traveling this weekend. But again, we thank her for taking the time to tune in and to share. Let me check our blog again. If there's anyone else that has a comment, question, please press 1 now. Okay. All right. Okay. 1861, coming at you. Give me a minute. All righty. 1861, your mic is open. Greetings, my sister.
This is Queen Mother Ma'ati in San Jose, California.
Greetings, Mother.
My pleasure. Glad to be here. Sad to hear, but it's everywhere, and we can make a difference. We have to stand up and reform our police stations that are invested in enslavement mentality. We've done it before. We've done it in other places. Now we have to continue to do it. And the murder of our young women and their babies, that just happened a week and a half ago in Haiti. Mother shot in the stomach, the baby's dead, and the mother, from what I saw of the wounds, I don't think she survived. I hope I'm wrong. So this is our challenge, and we have to continue to stay forward.
Absolutely. Ashe. Thank you, Mother. And again, when we go to the United Nations to do our session on the 19th, that is one of the areas we'll be talking about: Sudan, Haiti, and Congo.
Yes.
As it pertains to the women there. But what I have to make sure that people know and understand is that we must make certain that we do what we need to do right here. Because
mm-hmm.
over the years, what I've learned, Mother, is our women in particular are more apt to focus on other countries than they are their own community. For example, a few years ago, there was a big issue with Boko Haram, right, the Nigerian so-called thing or whatever that was taking the children,
the
girls in particular. Right, exactly. So you had a lot of people here in the U.S., particularly Black women, that were doing rallies and other things around that issue. But yet right in their own community, They weren't doing a gosh darn thing. And see, that can't happen.
No.
We have to be able to do things simultaneously. Absolutely. Got to do it simultaneously. It can't be just doing it all the way. It's like folks talking about what's going on in Gaza. And we should. Don't get me wrong. We should. But at the same time, we must deal with what is right in our midst and that we can have more control over. Right?
Right.
So again, Mother, thank you so very much for sharing, as usual. Always, you know, good vibes, good vibrations, and much love. So thank you so much again.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
What are you saying, Sister Janae? Oh, you need to go on mute, Sister Janae. Okay.
You know, Sister Minra has her hand raised.
Oh, okay. Oh, Sister Manira, I got you. I see you. All right, Sister Manira. Thank you, Mother. Sister Manira, unmute yourself. Go ahead, Sister Manira. We're not hearing you. Okay, I don't know what's going on. We're not hearing you, Sister Manira. Okay, let's move on. We're going to go to, 8521. Hold on one moment. We're opening up your mic.
Revolutionary love, everyone.
Oh, we got you now.
Yeah.
All right, greetings. Yep, we can hear you now.
I don't know what. I'm on both ends, so.
Well, we got you on this one.
Yeah, first I want to just give my, you know, heartfelt condolences to the sister down in South Carolina. And, you know, as always, give thanks for this much-needed, you know, topic of discussion that should be, you know, like wildfire going nationwide and global. And you know, yes, indeed, the call to action must be done, you know, and you setting up, you know, and connecting the dots, trying to, you know, establish the Ebony Alert, also the Sister Warrior Cadre. But, you know, here in Newark, New Jersey, we had a couple of incidents, you know, we've been on the front line. I'm actually on the ground, boot to the ground. You know, we had a couple of women who was, you know, trailed behind here in Newark where, you know, you have videos. And I showed you that we used to get up early in the morning to make sure the young girls and children are, you know, off to school and safe. Like, early in the morning, that was a task that I took, you know, out of a love offering and the need for us to get boots to the ground to make sure that our young, you know, youth are safe going to school. But it was another incident here, and we end up a sister that I was close with her mother, and we went hunting down day in from sun up to sundown, going into abandoned apartments and buildings and everything to find out that she was laying in a morgue when we, you know, came up with information.
Oh my gosh.
And I know, you know, way back when that incident happened, President General. And also we had a sister, a young sister who was the daughter of one of the new Black Panther Party. His daughter was found dead in a ditch down in North Carolina maybe a year ago. So there is a great need that, you know, we establish our own cadre of brothers and sisters, boots to the ground, the Ebony Alert, like you said, because they're not going to do it for us. You know, these governmental agencies, these police, you know, it seemed like and we had it where across the news where some of them are part of the
That's
human
right.
trafficking and
That's right.
the selling of our organs and all that. So if you think they're going to actually, you know, put the resources, put their time and effort into doing what our black nation need to do, then we got a problem. So I just want to thank you all very much for, you know, coming up with, you know, a plan of action, you know, for us to begin to help, you know, find our own, you know, go out. Like I said, I'm one who's been on the ground and still on the ground today, you know, boots to the ground, that anything that's going on in terms of trafficking and someone trying to, like, you know, go out and look for, you know, missing. We got a lot of missing women here and children here in the city of Newark, and I know it's, like, nationwide, but we have to begin to do something about it. So thank you very much. You know, the struggle continue, and I want to thank my president general as well as my sisterhood, my sister cadres, my sister that's on the live line that's doing work in their respective community. Give thanks, much love and appreciation to you all.
All right. Thank you, Sister Manera. Okay, Stanley, we're going to go to one more call, and then we're going to go back to Kimberly because Sister Manera raised a question, and I want to go to Sister. I want to go to Kimberly to ask her something about what Sister Manera just said. But before we do, we got one more caller. Caller, you are at, let's see. Okay, nope. It looks like that might be it for now. Okay, we're gonna hold off for now. Let me go back to Kimberly for a moment. Kimberly, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but we've gotten reports in the past that, and there's even been newspaper articles, by the way, where law enforcement folk have been found to be a part of the trafficking situation. Is that something that you are familiar with, heard of, or is there anything to share with us about that?
I don't have anything direct to share. I have not personally come across it, but it is very true. There's been numerous law enforcement in South Carolina have been arrested for some level of trafficking, sex offense, or being in possession of illicit material with minor. I mean, it is very much true. I had this conversation with my dad not too long ago that the people that you are supposed to be able to trust, children, with self, to help you in your worst time, ministers, daycare workers, teachers, cops, they're involved in it. Not all of them, but one is too many. But they are involved, yes.
Okay. Yeah, it kind of makes sense because, and again, it behooves us to examine this a little closer as we proceed, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I'm glad that Sister Manera raised that because this, as we move forward in becoming, you know, able to do preliminary kinds of investigations, these are some of the things we need to start looking closer at. But certainly
right.
we've seen it in various cities when it comes to drugs, you know. We've seen that. We can prove that, that there's been a connection with some in law enforcement and the drug distribution. Also, in certain cities, we've been able to see where even weapons the distribution of weapons has also been gone through the channels of law enforcement. So
right.
we know that these are some of the things that are actually happening. And, you know, again, it's up to us now to get more, a greater handle on what's going on in our communities. So,
right.
okay, this before we close out, let me just ask one more time if there is any more, if there are any more questions or comments. Again, you can press 1. And before we also close out, I do see that, let me check something. I think Sister Janaria had dropped off for a moment. We're going to bring her back in just to see if she has some closing comments. Yep, Sister Janae, you wanted to share something?
Yes, I was just thinking, I have a friend that's still missing from Spartanburg, South Carolina. Her name is Stacy Young. She's one of my classmates. And they still haven't found her either. So there are so many of our sisters out there that are missing and not without a trace. And my heart just goes out to your family. And I just wish there was so much more we could do than we are going to do. So please keep in touch with us. Please stay, you know, in a safe circle of sisters that really care about what's happening to us. And that's all I want to say. I do have some people in South Carolina that I can link you up with. And,
all right. Wonderful. Thank you, Sister Janae.
Well,
okay.
Can I say something real quick?
Sure,
in reference to Casey in Spartanburg, I to reach out to the family and was not successful at being able to make contact with anybody. So please feel free to pass my information on to me because I'm more than willing to step in and help.
Okay, thank you so much. I will contact her sister. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to open up, let's see, I think this is, again, I think this will be Sister Janaria, and if not, it's somebody from that area, so I'm going to open up the mic for 7387, your mic is open, and if again, I'm not sure if this Sister Janaria, because I know you dropped off for a moment, but whoever it is, please,
yeah.
your mic is, oh, okay, it is you. All right. Just wanted to check to see if you have any closing comments for us.
I just want to thank you all for having me here and for all the condolences.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we thank you. And by the way, Kimberly mentioned that you are a very intelligent and very bold young lady, young sister, and that, you know, they're encouraging you to maybe go into law, to be a lawyer. So definitely keep us abreast of that if that's something that you're looking at doing in the future, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Because we need lawyers. We need lawyers that's going to think and on our behalf and do on our behalf.
Right.
So we're in full support of that.
Thank you.
And thank you. All right, family. It looks like we're going to close out now. I did get a message from Sister Tawanda. She was trying to get into the blog. And guess what? We got so many folks in the blog that they're not letting anybody else in. So I was trying to connect with her so that she could join us on Zoom, but unfortunately she didn't pick up. I don't know if she decided to go to bed or what, but we'll get her back next week if we can't get her in for this week. But we thank everyone because our blog is full. We couldn't even get anybody else in. So, you know, yeah, wonderful thing. Give thanks. So, Kimberly, we're going to give you the opportunity to give us your closing comments, and then we're going to close the session out for tonight.
Well, I don't know how much it means, but just know I do see the issues. I know what needs to change.
and I know how badly it needs to change. And as I told you on the phone when we talked, however I can be of help and be supportive, I am here. I am here. So, and I'll just keep fighting the fight here too.
I know that's right. I know that's right. Well, again, we appreciate you taking the time to join us, and we certainly look forward to continuing to connect with you, to get updates. You know, as we said, we are here also. We are here to make sure that, and again, we're going to use that justice for Malaysia, justice for her family, justice for her unborn child. We must get some answers. There must be closure. I mean, we know that, you know, the healing process, that's going to take a while, but we can at least begin that with getting some kind of answers that will at least help us to start moving forward to some kind of closure. So, family, we're going to stay on top of it. We're going to stay on top of it and continue to get as much information as we possibly can as we proceed. And, Kimberly, how long roughly, I know it varies, but what would you estimate would be a reasonable time period for them to be able to provide the family and the community with information? What would be your suggestion in terms of how long we should wait before we look at taking some other action?
I honestly can't answer the case because there's nothing typical about Malaysia's case has been handled since it has become a homicide investigation. Typically, cause of death is released. It never interferes with an investigation. SLED is holding it to their chest because of fear of messing up the investigation. So I don't know.
Generally speaking,
it's going to be sooner than later.
Generally speaking, in general, when there's a murder, a homicide, generally speaking, what is your estimation of time period? 6 months, a year, generally?
Being that SLED is a very good department, I would say probably roughly at the most, I would say 6 months. And that's probably a struggle.
I'm sorry, repeat that again. You broke up a little bit.
Being that it's a very good entity, this is probably a stretch too far, but I'm going to say probably 6 months. But that might be.
Okay. I mean, you know, I know it varies, but I was just trying to gauge, you know, to just get a general idea of what we, you know, can look at possibly. Okay, that's all we needed to know. Yeah, that gives us enough insight, and that's great. Okay. All right, family, so we're going to move forward again. Kimberly Kite has been with us. She is formerly a law enforcement personnel, and she now has an organization. Again, tell them a little bit about the organization and your website or Facebook, whichever.
Well, we have a Facebook page. It's the Broken Link Foundation. We do have a website. It's not completely done, but it's out there. It's broken-link.org. And our organization is here for families, missing loved ones. We are investigative research. They dived. We have searchers around, and we have a partner with that are canine handlers, and we are steady growing. Let's to keep growing so that we can help.
Kimberly, let me ask a question real quick before you go. Would you consider in the future maybe doing a workshop or some other session that would provide information and maybe preliminary training or preliminary something for those who would be interested in learning how to be an investigator?
Sure.
Great.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that.
Great, great. All right. Wonderful. Okay, so when we talk again in the future, we're going to look at that. Because, again, we are solution-oriented, and it doesn't make sense to know these things and then not look at how we're going to do something about it in whatever what other area or any of the areas that we've been talking about. So, again, for us to have our own preliminary investigators, you know, and then those who want to go further, that too, but at least to begin with something that we can begin to look at. So, Kimberly, again, I thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
I look forward to, you know, our future conversations. I look forward also to obtaining more information and, of course, more importantly, the obtainment of justice.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
If you get any updates, I will let you know.
Oh, great.
Future
Wonderful.
Conversations with you, too, and... So,
that's wonderful.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
By all means. And thank you. And Sister Janaria, thank you. And you also have a blessed evening. And keep your head up. You know, stay focused. I know right now it's a very difficult time, but, you know, this too shall pass to some degree. Certainly it'll be with you, but at some point you will be able to get past it. And again, we are here in whatever way we can help to support. So again, I'm going to make sure that you have my contact information. I have your number. So we'll make sure that we're able to at least communicate if you wish to do so. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Great.
Yes,
great.
Ma'am. You could send me over your contact information. We could keep in contact.
Wonderful. Okay, will do. We shall do that.
Does she not have the sweetest little...
I'm sorry, you were breaking up. Say it again.
Doesn't she have the sweetest little voice?
Absolutely. Absolutely. She most certainly does. I love it. All right, family. Well, listen, we are going to close this session out. We thank all of you for tuning in. Again, we're sorry we couldn't get Sister Tawanda in. Our blog is full, not letting any more callers in. But again, it's all right. This is why we're going to be moving forward to make certain that we're using Zoom, particularly starting next month. We'll be doing it every week. It'll be our 15th year anniversary next month, April. We've been doing this program for 15 straight years, independent. So for those folk who, you know, always got some other stuff to say, let me see your work. Let me see the consistency of your work. All right, family. Listen, tomorrow, 12 o'clock, we are on Zoom. Again, sisters only for this session. We'll be talking about codes of conduct and other issues. And then at 7, we do have another special edition of New Day. We're going to be bringing forward the Harriet Tubman Day. And with that, share with you our campaign that we're getting ready to launch for there to be a holiday for a black woman. And we've got it down to 3 now. So we're going to share that with you. And also tomorrow at 7, again, a special edition of Blog. We'll be on Blog and on Zoom. We will introduce to you one of our new partners, the Negus Footwear and Clothing Line. You'll check that out tomorrow. It's official. Coming your way. And we'll tell you about our other partner collaboration with the National Black Unity News. So, again, tomorrow at 7 o'clock, join us again for a special edition of New Day. 12 o'clock, those sisters who are really interested. Now, we're at a different level now, so for this particular session, you got to be serious on this one. This is not just something you listening to and, you know, want to try to figure things out. Nope, this is work stuff. So, again, 12 o'clock noon. If you don't have the link already, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can text us at 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. All right. Very good, family. One last thing before we close out. Yesterday was International Women's Day, and we talked about that a little bit today, but we'll talk about it more tomorrow. And we're going to also talk about what's coming up at the United Nations starting on Monday, the CSW, the Commission on the Status of Women. They do it every year. This is the 68th session. So tomorrow we're going to talk about our Commission on the Status of African Women and what are our plans. What are we talking about? And lastly, the National Black Women's Political Agenda. We'll be talking about that tomorrow at 12 so that we can get ready to present our position to the upcoming presidential candidates and others. They need to know what we want. All right, family. I want to thank you all again for tuning into this session of New Day, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow, or if not tomorrow, in the very near future. So with that said, we say Pomoja to the Shinda. Together we shall win. Thank you all. Have a blessed one.